kill your masters. That's exactly how I'm going to end it.
Kill your masters.
Run them jewels fast. Run them jewels fast. Run them, run them, run them, run them, run them. Fuck the slow-mo. Run them, run them.
Hello, humans, and welcome to this bonus special episode of Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan, and we are going to be talking about the history, how Run the Jewels came together as a band and as a project. And doing that, to help me with that, is a friend of the show, one of my good friends, Tammy. Hello, Tammy.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining me to do this. This is fun and weird. I don't usually do these setups where like we're recording remotely and stuff, but it's fun and it's what has to be done. So this will be great. I'm excited about doing this because you introduced me to Run the Jewels. And I knew of Killer Mike and LP sort of separately in the past. And we'll go into their past a little bit as well before they kind of came together. But yeah, you're the one who birth Run the Jewels into my life and into my heart, so I thank you for that.
I'm very flattered because I forgot this bit of information. Like I've introduced some people to Goldlink, but Run the Jewels is just like, I feel like you would have known them already, but cool. I did not know that. Thank you.
Yeah, I knew them apart. I just never knew them together. But like that's the thing is for people who have also are learning and coming to music in different ways, they now know of Run the Jewels because they're a really big thing, bigger than possibly either LP or Killer Mike were individually in the early aughts. But to go back like to in their history and what they did in the early kind of aughts as they were starting their careers draws a trajectory to what happened when they both met together. So I'll go through the beginning of that really fast and then just to provide some context for the listeners and then we will go to the history of Run the Jewels and all that stuff. Of course, we're doing this because a Run the Jewels album is imminent. We don't have an exact date, but these things just sort of tend to happen. Like one day there's no Run the Jewels album, and the next day it's the day after Christmas, and Run the Jewels randomly drop an album, which happens. So just so we're not caught like off of it, of course, Sean and I will do a proper review of Run the Jewels 4 when it's released. But in the meantime, we can sort of talk about these. And we do these sort of historical things where we go back into the history of artists who are releasing new music. So check out those bonus episodes and subscribe to Audio Face if you're not already. But let's go into the beginnings of this. And I will start with LP. He is EL-P. He is he does a lot of the production for Run the Jewels. And he's done his own production. A lot of rap artists like have producers who come in on them to help them create music, but LP has a lot of times done it on his own to a lot of success. The very like gritty sort of technological but like almost boom bap, like modern boom bap kind of sound that Run the Jewels has is a lot because of LP and the way he did it. And you can even tell in his first project, his like debut solo album was called Fantastic Damage. It was released in 2002. You can't find it on Spotify yet, but I have a feeling that's going to change soon. And it's kind of just, it's an incredible little gem inside of music. There are a lot of people who listen to the podcast will know Sean and I describing this like golden era of hip hop and when that was happening in the early 2000s with The Chronic and MF Doom. And LP's Fantastic Damage actually is perfectly like placed in that, even though it's sort of not as popular as it should be. But it has a lot of what ultimately became not just LP's really like killer production, but his vocals, his lyrical dexterity, how he's able to switch through things super quickly. One of my favorite songs is called Dead Disney. And it's, it just showcases LP's lyrical dexterity and experimental boom bap production. And it makes it kind of funny and it's joking about dead Disney characters, which is just like a hilarious other thing. Trying to act cute, got his hoops in my pants. Product through the woods, destitute man, eggs. Brainwashed badly, propaganda hat. When a designer, modern culture's modern afternoon. Solid. Bottom the package with emotions, kitties again. Well, I come a damn that's fantastically uncomfortable. Farming and grinding language at it. Thorns will flare rabbit. other songs like Stepfather Factory in there that are also really fun. And so LP just kind of blew onto the scene as, yes, a white rapper, but a white rapper who like really brought his own. And so he got a lot of respect for that. Not so much as far as critically acclaimed, but it wasn't like charting or top anything like that. There are other rappers who were doing that. But in the underground, LP was a very well-known kind of figure. And then Killer Mike had similar beginnings. He was known, in fact, now history kind of knows him as being one of the founding fathers of trap music as it came from Atlanta, along with T.I. and another bunch of folks. But he was in that group of like young up-and-coming trap artists in Atlanta who was making music back then, doing mixtapes. His first mixtape, I'll get back to it, the name's escaping me right now, got a lot of buzz for its existence, and people really sort of liked what came out of it. I think it was Home Alone with the Crack, of course, how could we forget that name? But a lot of people really learned about Killer Mike from Snappin' and Trappin', a song off of Outkast's album featuring J Sweet from Stankonia, that album. Like I like my bitch, lick my blunts and spit like she do my dick. Attempted murder dick, the ways I choke chicks. Spit it in her eye, make it hard to focus. Killer Mike, oh, gonna calm down, things gonna get a little crazy. Oh, good, my ear rape G, you might as well give a throat, baby. Goop, gobbler, go crave it. No digging her down to the ground. Now you doing a dirty south, know what I'm telling my time, man. Big boy, my mentor, hear what you hollering about. But fuck that, I'm looking for love out in her mouth. Need her to gobble up, chisel like school lunches. Need her to take cat beatings. And that's when people got to really get acquainted with Killer Mike and his, like, fast-paced, moving rap, lyrically dense, kind of conscious in a way, but just like his vibe and his sound. And so that was sort of, they continued making music. Both Killer Mike and LP have a really long discography that goes out through the aughts, that mixtapes, albums, collaborations here and there. But we go to the year 2011 or 2012, and Killer Mike and LP are both making music for William Street, which is a division of Adult Swim. And one of the executives there, Jason DeMarco, happens to introduce Killer Mike and LP with each other. And it's the best thing that could have happened to rap music in the past decade, probably. The meeting went well. They created a couple songs together. In fact, a song for each other's albums, because Killer Mike's album Rap Music and LP's Cancer for Cure were released within weeks of each other in 2012. It's a lovely day to go glitch queen, isn't it? Listen in, suicide packs, see a bad try dissing him. The rock number no star 6-9 called Breathe Heavy at your little sis rock system. Cope with a loud talking and back. That motherfucker's the return of the insane psycho, sick savage, raw rap rhyme, motherfucker with the big black belly. If it get to shaking like jelly in the gun, no jam, you're a dead motherfucker. Niggas stay sweet like Smuckers, peanut butter packing motherfuckers, I'm ashamed for your mother. So they decided to tour with each other, and then a year later, we got Run the Jewels 1. So that's where you come in, Tammy. Run the Jewels 1. Yes. To tell us a little bit about that project.
I don't know what to tell you about that project. I mean...
All right, episode's over. Awesome.
Okay. So I actually discovered Run the Jewels through RTJ2. And then went back and listened to their discography. But for me, I think RTJ1 is pretty similar to RTJ2 in terms of you get an equal balance of really fast-paced songs and then some other laid-back tracks that all just kind of seamlessly flow across into one another. It's really good hype music. I don't know how else to describe it. It's versatile in terms of, like, I can listen to it in a lot of different environments, working out at the gym or just, like, driving late at night or hanging out with people. It's really great high music, too.
Allegedly.
Yes, allegedly. Although they do have a track in RTJ1. It's called, I believe it's No Come Down. And it's literally how, like, you're high and you're never going to come down from that kind of high. And it's, I don't know if they placed that towards the end of the album intentionally. It's like, you might think that things are mellowing out, but no, this is a high you're not coming down from, that they're not coming down from.
Yeah, it's in the middle of the album, kind of to allude to that fact, because Run the Jewels, production-wise, it's coming in very hard, it's very energetic. It is the kind of music you could listen to, even the mellow back kind of tracks that Run the Jewels has and LP is largely producing have a cadence to them, have a rhythm to them that you can still like run, just maybe run slower to it or do like lighter cardio for continuing the gym analogy. Wow, I really miss the gym. Anyways. Yeah. But there are the way they can do that is really nice. And No Come Down is one of the really great songs on that. My favorite song when I came to Run the Jewels, because like you, I discovered the albums out of order, but my favorite song off of Run the Jewels 1 is the fourth track, DDFH, stands for Do Dope Fuck Hope. And it's a bit, it's almost a laid back song in compared to many of the other songs on here, but it gets to why Killer Mike and one of the many reasons why Killer Mike and LP are a really good mix together is that they both are able to capture political ramifications in their music from this perspective of the streets, from this really unfiltered, raw kind of way of viewing things and viewing political calamity. And the song in particular takes you in the mindset of someone who wants to have hope and wants to see that things can change and be different, but they're a product of a community where their fathers and their grandfathers, etc., have had hope in the past, and it continually gets beaten down.
Pops in the ghetto, they move like the Gestapo. Drunk off their power and greed, they often hostile. My little homie talk shit back and they beat him bad. That boy in the hospital now, he looking bad. And I'm with his mama and dad, we looking sad. My own mama called me, say, baby, I'm just glad. They ain't put their hands on my child or kill his ass. Please don't rap about that shit before they murder your black ass. It's drones over Brooklyn, you blink, you get tookin'. And now you're understanding the definition of Brooklyn. Pigs on parade, but bacon fried and cookin'.
So Do Dope Fuck Hope is at one hand like almost giving up because of systemic pressures, but deciding that, okay, hope is not going to be enough. It's time to take matters into my own hands, which is definitely a track that the later albums run down towards. But I like that it puts you in that mindset. And that's a lot more range than you would have expected from, I guess back then you would have seen Run the Jewels as a one-off collaborative project. Usually these things happen in rap music, but they never come back. Like, they collaborated once and they never do it, but thankfully we got more.
Yeah, it's actually, okay, so DDFH is also one of my top two favorite tracks. The other one's Banana Clipper. Primarily because my favorite line in Banana Clipper is, I move with the elegance of an African elephant. It's just a great line, especially coming from Killer Mike.
I move with the elegance of an African elephant. I presented the evidence, eloquent as a president. Evident is the evidence. I deserve me a championship, but before I banana clip, I'ma chill so my man can rip.
Little man against Henny and with the heart of an orphan. I got the words of a murderer and I opt for distortion. You take a slice of my portion, I'll take a piece of your profit. I drive an illegal speed to keep an OZ in my pocket.
We run the jewels in your town, a quarter pound on my person. I'm known for pounding the stage, I'm talking, burning and cursing. Producer gave me a beat, said it's the beat of the year. I said LP didn't do it, so get the fuck out of here. You wanna hang, bring your throat.
But I don't know, just like the part about DDFH being, you know, like a commentary on, you know, socio-political dynamics. I think it's one of the first tracks that we see where they do start to get political. And it only gets better from there. Like RTJ2 has a lot more tracks that do have some form of commentary. Like, yeah, most rap artists might have a past, you know, dealing with drugs or crime or whatever. And I don't think Killer Mike shies from his past in that sense. But I don't want to shift gears into RTJ2 just too soon, unless that's cool.
Oh, no, we totally can. I'll just sum up and say the thing we usually do on Audio Face. Run the Jewels 1 was 33 minutes long, basically, and 10 songs, basically. Or around that. I don't have the counter in front. Yeah, it was 10 songs. And then Run the Jewels 2 came out a year and change later, and it was 12 songs, 41 minutes long. So a little bit longer, as Tammy was alluding to. And I mean, we don't have to spoil it. I mean, we can spoil whatever. It was an evolution of what was started in Run the Jewel 1.
Yeah, they kept on in terms of the production, the tempo, the overall vibes. They kind of just took that, ran with it. What's really interesting is RTJ2 starts off with Jeopardy, and Jeopardy's like first 5 seconds. It's like, in my head, every time I like envision the amount of energy that this track starts off with, I think of like a high school sport team just like jumping out onto the field or onto a basketball court, really hyped up with the high from like their previous win streak. Like, yeah, we're here to fuck shit up. And then the track just kind of mellows out for the rest of it. And it kind of captures, you know, the essence of RTJ, which is a really decent balance of, you know, high energy, upbeat music. But it's not like...
overwhelming in that sense. Like, it's not something that's constantly at this sort of tempo. Whereas some things that stay at that high pace can feel almost, definitely sonically overwhelming, a little bit uninspiring too, because you want to see a band do more than just like one type of song and show a little bit of a range. And yeah, the bravado that you're talking about, the Killer Mike and LP start RTJ 2 and 1 and 3 and probably 4 off with, it's definitely something that's there in rap. Like, every rap artist has to be the best. And the way you elaborate off of that or explain that speaks volumes for what you're doing. And like you said, the way it's done in RTJ 2 is a good like harbinger for everything else. I want to continue because I think you're going to mention one of my favorite songs, but I kind of just want to see what you're going to continue with.
Okay. I don't know, because I have a lot of favorite tracks on RTJ 2, but I'd say number one is Lie, Cheat, Steal. And number two might be Blockbuster Night Part 1. I don't know which one of those two I should go into. Do you have a preference?
Well, I was thinking in a different order.
Okay.
But I have no preference, because I was thinking that you would go in a different order. But let's talk about Lie, Cheat, and Steal, because that is probably my favorite song on there. And yeah, just to go ahead and talk about it.
Okay, so I guess going off of our, you know, earlier discussion, in RTJ1, DDFH is kind of that politically defining song, in terms of, yeah, we're like more than just rap artists who, you know, talk about what we do. And Lie, Cheat, Steal is like the chorus line is lie, cheat, steal, everybody's doing it. I'm pretty sure I missed out a word. I think they also say
that's fine, yeah.
But, you know, the idea is this is, I don't want to say this is America, but this is the world as it is today. Like, you have white collar workers doing some form of embezzlement. They're lying, they're cheating, they're stealing. Everybody's doing it. The only difference is that black people are disproportionately targeted in terms of incarcerations, supporting the military-industrial complex, and, you know, they're being called out for it because of their skin color and because of the prejudices that are there in this country. And I love Dr. King, but violence might be necessary. Because when you live on MLK and it gets very scary, you might have to pull your AK-71 to the cemetery. We overwork, underpaid, and we underprivileged. They love us, they love us. Why? Because we feed the village. You really made it or just became a prisoner of privilege. You willing to share that information that you've been given. Like, who really run this? Like, who really run that man that say he run this? Who really run that man that say he run this? Run this. Like, who really fun this? Like, who really fun? Who say he fun this? Like, who in the world gonna tell Buster who to put on the you can't come list? Now don't be sick. And then I think he makes a reference to that guy. What is it? Donald Sterling? No.
Yeah.
I'm not maybe, so good with course. But there's some dude who owned the Clippers.
That's the guy, Donald Sterling. He owned the Clippers, and he lost ownership of the Clippers because his racist rants got publicized and recorded. So, that dichotomy of, A, it's breaking down this idea of you work really hard and you do well in life. It's like, no, all of these bad things actually get people very far ahead in life. And the important part you mentioned, Tammy, which I think is good, is that it's these traits, lying, cheating, stealing, killing in a lot of cases, can happen in white collar crime or they could happen on the streets. And for a lot of people who are very novices when it comes to rap, or they're just acting or just arguing in bad faith, they'll say that, oh, rap music is all about crime and doing drugs and dirty dealing, and it's this fantasy that's not built in reality. Well, I think what Run the Jewels is a really good job of contextualizing this for a very broad audience, a very multi-racial audience, is that these things are just out in the world, and some people wear a suit and tie when they're doing them, and some people have tattoos and chains while they're doing them, but it's the way things are, it's the way things go, it's kind of a reality. And you can sit with the reality, you can be angry about the reality, but you can also have to just, the first step is knowing about that reality and really getting an idea of it, which they just paint a really good picture of it here.
Mm-hmm.
Really fast before we skip it, and you go into Blockbuster, Close Your Eyes and Count to Fuck is one of my favorite songs. I thought you might have mentioned it. It also just like has a really cool where like Run the Jewels as a voice is the backdrop of the song.
How you like my styling, bruh? Ain't nobody smiling, bruh. About to turn this motherfucker up like Rikers Island, bruh. Where my thugs and my cripples and my blooders and my brothers? When you niggas gon' unite and kill the police motherfuckers? Or take over a jail? Get them COs hell. The burning of that sofa, goddamn, I love the smell. Blankets and pillow torches. Where the fuck the warden? And when you find them, we don't kill them, we just waterboard them. We killing them for freedom, cause they tortured us for boredom. And even if some good was that, fuck it, the Lord will sort them.
We out of order, your honor, you out of order. This old court is unimportant. You fuckers are walking corpses. I'm a flip wig synonym, living within distortion. A bite into a cyanide molar before you wars win.
It's just someone going, run the jewels, like really quickly. And I just thought as a production kind of twist of LP choosing to do that, it goes into rappers must admit that they're the shit all the time. So what makes you more, what says that you're the shit quite like turning the name of your rap group into the production of your song? That's pretty amazing. And yeah, it just goes really hard like every song on this album does. So I really like it.
So I don't have much to say about Blockbuster Night, except for the fact that it's on one of my workout playlists. But I do have something to say about the song Crown. I thought it was really funny because the chorus is,
can't pick up no crown, holding what's holding you down. Can't pick up no crown, holding what's holding you down. Can't pick up no crown, can't pick up no crown.
Can't pick up a crown, holding what's holding you down. And I remember reading someone's interpretation of this line as saying, you know, you can't weigh yourself down with the guilt of your past if you want to move forward and rise to the top. And Killer Mike tweeted, you're reading way too into this. It's literally about the fact that you can't pick up a crown because picking up the crown indicates that there was a king prior. And it was just really funny to see this moment where, you know, it's like people are attaching meaning where it's not there. And Killer Mike's like, yeah, no, this just really meant that, like, we're not picking up a crown that somebody else has left. This is like us making our own space and like carving out who we are in the industry and, you know, being where we are at the top.
Yeah, like it's just a metaphor. And it's one of those aspects of rap music where like you can pack a lot of meaning into a metaphor and other people can perceive more meaning than what's even there. But I mean, that's what just makes music really cool. So you go through that. A lot of people thought Run the Jewels 2 should have gotten a Grammy. There's a lot of talk that it was basically snubbed for a Grammy that year because it was critically acclaimed. A lot of music publications in 2014 said RTJ2 was like one of the best rap albums of the year. And looking back, 2014 was a pretty heavy hitting year for music and for rap especially. And I would definitely put, as far as rap albums go, I would put RTJ2 in like my top 10 that came out that year. But it didn't get any awards. It didn't like get a major like recognition in that sense. But recognition doesn't really matter so much in this world right now, because on the internet, as long as you have your like group of fans and friends and everything, then it's all sort of fine. But that naturally brings us to Run the Jewels 3.
Wait. It came out in...
Sorry. Yes. I'm not quite ready to move on from RTJ2, just because I think part of what increased their popularity between RTJ2 to RTJ3 is the fact that they also featured on one of the tracks with Big Grams, which was another really interesting collaboration that I'm not going to go tangent off into, but it was pretty cool to see them on stage with Fantagram and Big Boy during the Treasure Island Music Festival. And that was, I believe, October 2015. Gator shoes high stepping. My dopey eyes just hide behind my Dita frame. I heard this nigga say he don't like me, well, he the lame. It's not your fault, baby. We were just here born to shine. I walk with a spot on me. My life's a sad solo. The neon sign flips when I pass it all slow-mo. You don't give the nod, you'd rather not even know me. Cause even me just is before, yeah.
I remember that. I think I even remember you talking about that.
So I think that's when I first started bringing up like RTJ and Big Grams to a lot of the people that I interacted with, and that may have been when I first started talking about them with you. But yeah, I think that's another like, I wouldn't say pivotal like moment, but I do think that, you know, the increasing collaborations, not just the fact that LP and Killer Mike are collaborating, but the fact that they're also collaborating with other interesting acts like Fantagram and Big Boy together. And the I wouldn't say the four of them, because it's technically the five of them, but the five of them together is a formidable force. But all right, let's go into RTJ3. Forward like a year and a half.
Yes, so Run the Jewels 3 comes out to much fanfare at once, because it's released on Christmas Day in 2016. It's a weird time to announce or release music on Christmas. Most music gets released before November for Grammy qualification reasons. But it's Run the Jewels, why would they care? And it didn't matter, because I think this was a pretty good album. I would argue one of their best, but let's save that question for the end of the podcast. I think that could be really fun. But yeah, Run the Jewels 3, I think, was their most polished project to date, as it damn well should be, because it's the newest one as of the time we're talking, before RTJ4. And usually bands should have a sort of a progression with how better they get, but it was bigger at 14 songs and 51 minutes long. It felt like it had, whereas one of my critiques with some of the older albums is not that it had filler, but it had songs where it felt like they were thematically disjointed, where maybe if you move some of them around, it might be more cohesive to listen to as an album. Run the Jewels 3 felt like the message had a journey going from Down at the beginning to Kill Your Masters at the very end. And of course, as a Run the Jewels album, or as a Killer Mike project does, or an LP project does, because even before Run the Jewels, they were pretty political for rappers. It comes together to talk about all these different things and all these different ideas through this journey that's really cool and doesn't really lose any of the essence of what made Run the Jewels, such as like magical, fantastic coming together of artists. So yeah, from there, take it away.
Oh, okay. I feel like RTJ3 is where I kind of took a step back in terms of like, I kept going back to RTJ 1 and 2, mainly because for me, I guess my biggest takeaway is like, I connect more to the production and the overall energy of the song or the music than I do to the lyrics as much. I think for me, I need the production to draw me in to the lyrics of the music. And RTJ3 was a little bit different in terms of, you know, thematically or in terms of the overall vibe. It's not a similar energy the way it flows. It is a little bit more mellowed out. And maybe that's to emphasize the message that they're conveying. But I don't know. I think I'd say like there were fewer tracks that stood out to me in RTJ3 than in the previous albums. And I can't quite place my finger on it, but Legend Has It was a great track.
Mongol and mythical team, feeling this treacherous thing. Legend says L is a spun out of hell. The myth is my mama's a murderous queen. Your life can end like in Godfather 1. You get the gun as I christen my son. If I die today in this hell, I should pay. Tell the Lord Mikey said, fuck, it was fun.
Every new record's my dick in a pot. We get a doozy, the mullah's a lot. You're getting used to me doing no wrong. I don't play chicken, you prick, I'm a fox. You wanna kick it, I'll give you the rock. You kiss the wood chipper blade if you bark. I'm fucking magic, in fact, I'm a warlock, I can talk. I got a
and not just for what it is, but also the music video for it. Like, I believe it's the one where you've got like an entire room full of like people in suits just kind of progressively losing their shit at each other.
No. So the Legend Has It video is the one where it's a police lineup. And
it's like...
I like that video too, because in the Legend Has It video, it's a police lineup where everyone does all these different characters as like a schoolgirl, they're these robbers, everyone's in this police lineup. And it's a commentary on police brutality and a lot of the other things and the over-incarceration of black and brown bodies in the prison system. It's stuff that RTJ has gone over in the past. But the funny aspect is in the end, the funny aspect is LP is tripping on acid during the entire video in reference to one of the earlier lyrics. And so the video has that kind of melting world aesthetic that acid does. But it also, at the end, all the people in the police lineup, Killer Mike and LP are arrested and booked in the video. All the people in the police lineup at the end of the video are in a back alley, like, doing drugs, shooting dice, doing all the stuff that Killer Mike and LP were accused of. So it's a really interesting sort of juxtaposition right there of the perception of who does crime versus who is actually doing crime, which is, in a way, everyone.
Okay, I just realized that the video I mixed it up with is Nobody Speak, their collaboration with DJ Shadow.
Yes. Collaborations, I could... This would be a longer podcast if we went into the collaborations, because I love Nobody Speak, but that's fair. Also on RTJ3, like probably my favorite Run the Jewels song is called Ticketron.
It's
Run the Jewels live at the Garden. Live from the Garden. Live from the Garden. Live from the Garden.
Run the Jewels live at the Garden. Run the jewels
live from the garden.
Run the jewels
live from the garden. Live from the
begging your pardon. Run the jewels live at the garden. Last two pirates alive are still yarging. My girl got my heart as a bargain. Licked from her lips to the crease in her garden. Harassed my religion. Loves why I'm living. Smoke on the face by the fearful partner. Life is shit NATO. Smoke my umbrella. Boys bad turning the slacks to all yellow. Prick.
It's one of the higher energy RTJ3 songs that are out there. It samples the Ticketron voice from the Madison Square Garden calling ticket thing. And it's all an ode to the fact that they didn't think they would be a big enough band to perform at Madison Square Garden ever. And they are, and they did, and they just love it. So it's that fun kind of, yes, we're big rappers who came up, but it's also those rappers who are like impressed with themselves and genuinely proud they got to the place they were. And if you've been following them throughout their entire like musical history, or even just the start of RTJ, it's a pretty nice thing for a fan to see their artists that they like get to do it big. And that's kind of the like process of RTJ3, definitely in the beginning. I'll agree with you that the middle parts of it, they're a little bit slower to say than earlier albums. They don't have that energy, but they have that emotion, and that carries through. It almost like is a substitute. Replace the energy, but include a lot of emotion in it. Yeah. Sounds like Don't Get Captured. Oh Mama is another one I like. It's slower, but as an album, I would still say, yeah, for that thing that would be an entry into Run the Jewels, the thing that would get people in the door, which is the fast-paced shit you can run to in the gym. Run the Jewels 3 does not deliver for that. But I think it delivers a more completed project for as far as like a musical artist go. Because my complaint with RTJ 2, though I generally like it, is that it almost leans into the energy too much. And you start to wonder, what are the limits of LP's production range? As like, are they only going to be these fast-paced songs? Or are there going to be the ability to do something slower? Listening to LP in the past, especially from Fantastic Damage, you know he can do slower, but I think RTJ3 was just that good balance of showing both. Maybe a little bit less of the fun and pep, but all of that's replaced with like emotion and message that I think is really good.
So one of the things that I actually liked about Oh Mama is when I first started listening to it, it felt a little more rock influenced than like their, you know, consistently hip hop based production.
My mama said that I'm not living right.
They want us dying, mama.
My mama said that I'm not living right.
But I ain't crying, mama.
My mama said that I'm not living right.
You raised a line, mama. I ain't lying, mama.
My mama said that I'm not living right.
And I think that kind of goes back to your initial assessment that RTJ3 rounds itself out and, you know, LP goes beyond his prior production range, which is, you know, really upbeat, but still dynamic hip hop beats that are, you know, of a consistent trend. But
yeah, and like tempo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God, all of them all are really good. I, in a sense of reading the room, I would still say that for you, you find RTJ2 to be your favorite album of the three.
Oh, yes. Yes. And I can't believe I forgot about this track, and I can't believe I didn't mention it, but one of my other favorites from that album is Love Again. And I know when they went tour for RTJ3, when we went to go see them, they actually got Gangsta Vu to come on stage and rap that song with them.
Yeah, that song is so great because it simultaneously like plays with some of the more misogynistic aspects of rap music, but then allows a woman to join on and then switch it up entirely near the end, which I think is like a cool little note that happened on there.
Yeah,
we can include that as well. Yeah, it's all really good. It's one of the rap collaborations that I didn't expect to like from the beginning, but as a combination of listening to their music and just being your friend, I was exposed to them more, and I end up just like falling in love with them as a project. Run the Jewels 4, since we haven't heard it yet at the time of recording this, what do you think it might sound like, or what do you want it to sound like? I think we've gotten two singles that have come out from it recently.
Yeah.
There's Yankee and the Brave, which is interesting and sounds a little bit older. And then there's Ooh La La, which is my new favorite running song. Like, I was running yesterday, and that was, like, how I started, and it's just so good.
First of all, fuck the fucking law, we is fucking raw. Steak tartare, oysters on the half shell, switch your ball. Life a bitch, and the pussy feed, still fuck the raw. I'm a dog, I'm a dirty dog, ha 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 ha. Oh, dirty bastard, go in your jaw, shimmy shimmy, y'all. Got the simmy in the hemi, go and gimme, y'all. Pugilistic, my linguistics, RJ Ruder damage, y'all. And I rap it, point graphic, be set up the camera.
Ooh la la, are we green? Ooh la la, are we green?
Basically just starts by saying like, at the end of the world, at the end of the world, when we've all finished battling the like forces of evil and darkness that keep us down, we threw a huge fucking party, and they're just dancing and vibing in the streets of like a large town back when you could do those kinds of things. There's a lot of callbacks to the 90s in there and like 90s hip hop. It's produced by DJ Premier and features Greg Nice as well. But it definitely leaves the door wide open for me to like how this album might sound. Like, what are your thoughts?
On like, at least from what I've heard of Ooh La La, I feel like they're going to continue this trend of, you know, deviating from one consistent sound and expanding and experimenting their style. You know, Ooh La La does not sound like an RTJ track. It's not like if I listen to it, I'll be like, yes, this is definitely Run the Jewels. So I'm excited to see what RTJ 4 holds. I think what I need to do is let go of some of my own, I wouldn't say reservations, but I'd say my attachments, and just kind of like not be one of those fans that are like, no, I want this band to sound the exact same for their entire career, because that's not realistic. And that's what I like about other bands like Gorillaz. So why would I expect the same from, you know, Run the Jewels? So I'm excited. I don't know when it's going to drop, but I mean, maybe it'll be like Christmas in May.
I honestly don't think LP even knows when it's going to drop, but actually, so I think it's going to drop soon. The reasoning being, again, this is totally going to date this episode, but within the past week of when we recorded this, LP has just been posting photos of these like hard drives on his computer. One of them has a label that's like you print out and just says RTJ4, and another one has like another thing on it, but you could possibly interpret it to mean Fantastic Damage. And he said in the comment, I've got exciting news about Run the Jewels 4. I'm talking weeks, not months. Also, Fantastic Damage might be coming soon. So I think LP has used this time during the isolation of 2020 to finish up Run the Jewels 4, to get it ready to go. And he's shown that it can drop at literally any time, including the day of or day after Christmas. So we could have it. I don't want to make predictions because it'll date it, but I think we'll get it within the next month or so.
Yeah.
I'm excited as fuck for it either way. So that is, and of course, whenever it does come out, albums have been being pushed and moved all different ways this year, but whatever happens, Sean and I will review it on an episode of Audio Face, and y'all will get to listen to it should you subscribe to this podcast. Which you can do in whatever podcast app you're listening to, whatever. This is pretty much the end of the episode. Tammy, thank you very much for joining us for this. Is there anywhere the audience can find you if they want to, I guess, find the stuff you do?
I'd say Spotify. That's where I make most of my playlists. My handle is Tammy Sharma, TammiSharma.
And I'll link to it in the description.
Yeah, and I specifically disconnected from my Facebook account so that you can actually look me up by username.
But, okay, the story of you disconnecting your Spotify from your Facebook account is like a tale of two cities. It's a goddamn tragedy, and it took so long to get things back together. I remember it was so bad.
And the worst part is all of my like previous taste in music and like the way my taste has evolved over time is kind of wiped clean, because I remember at the end of 2019 when everyone got like their decade recap of, hey, these are the artists that you've been listening to and how your taste has evolved, this was like, nope, your taste in music began 2016 onwards. There's nothing prior to that. So even all of my like Run the Jewels like album like play counts are gone. So I have no idea how much I listened to any given artist before this transition happened. So
gone to the winds of time. Everything digital is ephemeral or something deep like that. Anyways, but yes, people should definitely check you out on Spotify because your playlists are awesome. A really, really, really old episode of Audio Face, I think number 18, was one where we talked about Talkie Monster and we also talked about playlist creation. And I've taken many of the lessons from that episode and used it to make playlists for Audio Face. And so I and the listeners of those playlists are greatly appreciative for you, and I encourage everyone listening to learn from the master and check out her playlists. So, yes, thank you very much for joining us. You can find Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod. And I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so that when Run the Jewels 4 does come out, you can hear Sean and I's review of it. And until next time, kill your masters. That's exactly how I'm going to end it.
Kill your masters. 'm thinking about the time we recorded in my room and we're day drinking.
Memories. I would much rather be doing this in person and very drunk right now, but
yeah.